Today, gold, inflation, deflation with Harry Dent. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to this post covering finance and property news with a distinctively Australian flavour. Today, I'm joined by economist author Harry Dent. Hi, Harry.
Hey, Martin. Good to be back.
Well, I appreciate your time. I know you're busy today, but there's an important debate coming up with Peter Schiff on the 20th. We'll put the links below. But I want to get to the critical issues, right? Because you and he sit on some very different perspectives, right? And one's on inflation, deflation, and the other one is on the trajectory of the US dollar. So let's go through each of those in turn. Inflation, deflation, you're a depression guy.
Yeah, okay. If you look at most financial crises in history, it's a debt bubble that builds up, and debt bubbles cause overexpansion, and that causes financial asset bubbles. You know, stocks do real well and real estate does well, and then people feel good and they start speculating, and then interest rates go down and loans are easy. You know, you get a classic bubble, first in debt, then financial assets, and then that bubble bursts when the economy is weak or when it just gets to its own extremes in debt, financial assets, stock valuations, real estate, anything. And you have a deleveraging of the bubbles, which means money. Here's what people don't get, Martin. Money. And I'm estimating in the global economy, $500 trillion now in financial assets globally, $255 trillion in debt. Ever since the GFC, the answer was quantitative easing instead of deleveraging to stop it. And that just created an even bigger financial asset bubble while not letting the debt bubble deleverage. And we add more debt, especially in the emerging world. So we got more debt. But what's unusual in this one, it's the financial asset bubble is so big. But the point is why depressions occur, why they cause deflation in prices, is money that builds up artificially through all this leverage and debt. Debt's just adding money in the economy. And a lot of it's unproductive, as you know. And financial assets, when they get really pricey, like real estate in Australia or stocks, you know, tech stocks today, you know, Tesla, at, you know, some ungodly valuation when they're not making money and sell a 0.5% of the cars in the world. That's unproductive use. So it deleverages, money disappears, less money chasing goods, slower economy from all of that. You get deflation. Now, deflation is the worst of scenarios, except for possibly hyperinflation. We'll get to that in a minute. But you can see why in 2008, when things started to go down, the central banks looked at this. Oh, my God, this is looking like 1930, not like the 1990 recession or the 2001 recession or, you know, that sort of stuff. And so they panicked, like, we can't have that because deflation causes the greatest meltdowns, the greatest unemployment, the greatest business failures, because it is a basic, I call it, like in drug addiction terms, a basic detox of a financial drug habit that builds up and creates something for nothing. So you got to take that nothing out, the unproductive debt, the unproductive companies, unproductive assets that come from that, and bring the world back to health. That's the surprise for people. What came after the 1929-32 crash? We eliminated half the debt in the United States as a percentage, half. So and it was all private debt. Governments never eliminate debt. They have to support a bad economy and do all this stuff. And that makes consumers and businesses healthier. They have less debt in the future. And it's unproductive debt, which is allow more productive use of money in the future, and people get out of bad companies and industries that are failing, because people don't do that by choice. They have to be forced to, and then they're forced to get into better industries. The next thing you know, we're coming out of the Great Depression with screaming growth in the U.S. and the world. Did we have screaming growth coming out of the GFC? A little better in Australia, but U.S. 2%, the smallest, the slowest recovery in history, and yet stock markets go to massive new highs. Why? The answer this time, it was an accident that they repeated once it started to happen. Oh, they tried to do the normal thing. Oh, make reserves more, you know, available to the banks, lower interest rates and requirements and all that stuff. Make it easy to borrow. Oh, nobody wanted to borrow because they borrowed in the great bubble. Consumers and businesses were over in debt. They didn't need to borrow. And even in the recovery, 2%, businesses had excess capacity from the debt. They don't need to reinvest. So they buy back their own stocks with cheap money and on and on and on. And the money, but the money, what people don't understand, and this is my big debate with Peter, if the money had gone into the banking system and multiplying normal money, they call it M2, okay, M1 and M2, then that can cause consumer inflation, especially if you do it rapidly. You know, this money went direct into buying financial assets from financial institutions, injecting new money into an already overvalued system that just pushes asset prices higher. Now, they did not intend that to happen when they first threw $1 trillion in the US and several trillion globally to get us out of the 2009, to reflate out of deflation, which was starting to set in. That wasn't the intention. It was to revive the economy. No, financial assets going up at least make the wealthier people, the top 0.1%, 1%, and by the way, very good statistic, 20%, at least in the United States, and that's gonna be pretty typical everywhere, of the households in the US own 88% of financial assets outside of your own private home. Any other investment real estate's in it. 88%. So guess what? People say, well, that's only 20%. I'm like, well, guess what? I'm the demographic guy. 20% control 50% of the spending. 20% control 88% of financial assets, 1% control 40%, and 0.1% control 20%. So it's a wealth effect. It makes the wealthy wealthier, but at least those people do spend strongly. So here's how I explain a 2% growth economy, which is terrible for a recovery, especially when you should have cleaned the clocks, which we didn't. We didn't allow debt to deleverage, just like Japan never did, and they've never grown since. So it's basically the at most people spending zero more. They're going nowhere. And the top 20% spending at 4%. And you get 2% average because it's 50-50 because the 20% are heavily weighted. That's the economy we got. That is not an inflationary economy. Okay, that's not what causes inflation. Almost every hyperinflation, which what Peter talks about, he's talking about well, you keep printing money exponentially more, which we are doing, by the way. And I did predict that, still said there wouldn't be hyperinflation or inflation, and there's not. But, you know, that's not what's happening. The money's just going into financial assets. And the market, you know, the stock market keeps going up no matter what. Real estate keeps edging up no matter what. And the economy doesn't grow. Oh, the economy keeps slowing down if they don't keep stimulating. So that's a deep, we are... All this money printing and all this financial asset inflation is to fight a debt economy and to create growth again through the wealth effect. But the wealth effect only affects the wealthy. So it's a, you know, it's bad policy. It going into unproductive things, it's helping wealthy people buy bigger boats, okay, and bigger cars and all that sort of stuff. So that is not deflationary. An inflationary scenario, I'll give you the Y-mark real quick, because this does happen, and this can happen. And it looks like this in some ways. Germany, now tons of hyperinflations in banana republics, okay? But they're just little countries that they don't have anything, and they borrow a lot of money from some foreign bank or foreign creditors, or you know, and then they overspend and stuff, and then they fail. And what kills them is not only the penalties from failing on their debts, but their currency collapses, and then their payments to the foreign, that's a key word, foreign creditors get exponentially, and that's how you get hyperinflation. Well, this happened to a developed country. It doesn't usually happen to developed countries. Germany, how did they get in this mess? First of all, that inflation, hyperinflation, happened right into the tail end of an inflationary period. I call it the summer season. High inflation, wars often as part of that, and recessionary economy, just like we had in the 70s, okay? So it was an inflationary era. We've been in a deflationary era ever since 2008, the winter season. I predicted that would happen 20-some years before it happened, okay? It's just part of the cycle, spring, summer, fall, winter. So they lose World War I, a major war, okay? So they lose, so they are bankrupt. And they borrowed most of that money overseas to fight that bet. You can't just generate that internally when you shut down your economy to fight a war. oh, that wasn't enough. The Allies were really pissed at Hitler. Or, you know, no, that wasn't Hitler back then, Germany. And said, oh, we're going to put reparations on top of that, you scumbags. You cost us a lot of money. You and, you know, Mussolini and whatever. Well, now you got bankrupt, reparations, and with that, the currency starts to crash. And with that, they have to pay so much more for reparations, currency crash, and they just had to print money till they blew. That's not what this is. That's not even remotely close. We printed $25 trillion globally and 7.2 in the U.S. over the last decade. And we printed half of that just in the last year because of the COVID crisis and the repo crisis. So we're printing exponentially more, like Peter warned and like I warned. And Peter would say, well, that'll cause inflation. Where's the inflation? We're already several months after that. No inflation, 1.5% or less. Japan's still near zero. Europe's still near 1%. They've been that for, we've had a decade of massive money printing, and I've got inflation charts. You know what? Inflation, you wouldn't tell money printing's happening. Inflation's just going up at a normal kind of rate that is going up, and you print a lot or you don't print. It doesn't make much difference. It makes a huge difference in the financial asset bubbles. That it correlates with the stock. The biggest correlation is money printing and stock market, but it's also real estate and even gold. But gold bubbled up more than stocks. When I'm debating people like Peter and a lot of other gold bugs, he's my favorite because he's the best gold bug. That's why we're bringing him over here to Australia. He's the most competent and best-selling gold bug in the United States. And I think people know me better relatively than him here. But I tell you, he sells twice as many books as I do over here in the United States. So he's the most competent. But people expect that's going to happen. I'm just like, where's the, if $25 trillion printed and a lot of that exponentially just in the last several months since the COVID crisis hit, and we still can't get any inflation. What's, are they going to have to print $100 trillion in a year? And would anybody let them? I mean, and what's the Fed doing here, Martin? The Fed's telling the U.S. government, hey, we've been carrying the whole ball here, you scumbags. You guys need to do more fiscal stimulus. And guess who just blocked that second stimulus plan? The Republican senators who just got reelected against projections. I said to my subscribers, the worst thing could happen is Biden gets president and the Republican Senate stays in. Because he'll want to stimulate, but they will limit it. And they'll limit even more. They were limited with Trump breathing down their neck, their own Republican president, and they still wouldn't do it. Pelosi, the Democrats wanted it. They always give money to people struggling. That's their MO. They're the Democrats, you know. They're not the capitalists, you know. And so that's what we have. We've been fighting deflation, but deflation is the trend. Because deflation is the trend, we're already over in debt, already over capacity, and nobody's got more over capacity than China, your biggest neighbor and customer. We're in a deflationary world. That's why we print all this money. It doesn't create consumer inflation or normal inflation, and it's only creating financial asset inflation because that's where they're putting the money. So of course you have more money. What does it take for the stock market to say, oh, we'll go up anyway, you know? Oh, the COVID. Well, they're going to print more money, so we'll go up on that. You know, oh, V-shaped recovery. I'm like, yes, it's V-shaped for all the industries that can come back. What about the 20% of entertainment and commercial real estate and travel and all this sort of stuff won't come back for a year or two? I can't get back to Australia now for a year. It'll be another, at least to summer, if not longer. And you guys don't even have much of a problem. So that doesn't come back. Small businesses, I just showed that to my subscribers this last week. Small business employment is down, has not bounced at all, unlike the big companies can float bonds at the lowest rate still in history because that bond market supported by Fed and kept. Banks are tightening up for small businesses, but big corporations can borrow all they want in these dumb, stupid, zero adjusted for inflation rate bond markets. So they're recovering. But not the travel, not the COVID hit industries, not the small businesses. And my favorite graph, Martin, I probably mentioned this last time we talked, since the GFC, when we had 2% zombie companies, in the recovery, we've grown to 19%. We never weeded them out in the downturn, and they've just grown more and more and more. because no banks have to foreclose on them because central banks are always giving the banks plenty of money. They don't have to foreclose. Nobody wants to foreclose if they don't have to because it hits their profits, hits their stocks and their shareholders. So they just don't foreclose and let these companies limp along. They're just limping. This COVID shock hit these companies, these small biz. I'm telling you, Martin, I went through a similar shock in Puerto Rico. Peter's down in Puerto Rico, by the way. He was down here before me. We got hit by that hurricane. We were just like COVID. 3 months, boom, like a atom bomb hit the economy. Nothing worked. Dead. I had to move to New York for 3 months temporarily just to survive. Come back, very slow recovery, and I'd say about 20% restaurants and small businesses you notice in the street just never came back and aren't even back today. I got restaurants down the street from me still closed 3 years later. So that's the stock market is high on crack as usual, got money chasing it, looking for any excuse to go up, discounts bad news almost immediately, and then floats on, well, blah, 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 blah. I think this market's hit its end because we've had a big cross between the long-term stock top trend line at the biggest bubble in history and the steeper one from the quantitative easing stimulus, which even in a slow economy, steepest bubble we've ever had, longest bubble we've ever had any time in history. And these things are colliding right here in September, October, November. And I think we may have a little more to go, but I think what's going to happen this time, let's go back in reverse. Another thing I'd argue with Peter Schiff and a lot of hedge fund managers like Ray Dalio. Last time, the debt bubble started to unravel, subprime loans in the U.S. and then junk bonds and then emerging countries and then blah, 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 then everything. The debt bubble unraveled and caused a recession and caused financial assets like stocks and real estate to go down. Okay, debt bubble triggered it. Not this time, because banks have been more conservative and, you know, and the central banks are keeping debt afloat. You know, debts don't default anymore. They don't have to. It's the financial asset bubble that now is twice the size of the debt bubble. I don't think that's ever happened in history. So I was debating Ray Dalio at a big conference in February this year. And he agreed with me. He said, there's this long-term cycle that's peaking and there's a bunch of 8 to 10 year cycles. Like, yeah, Ray, that's my gig, man. He said, but I don't think this next cycle will be as bad because I don't see as many debt defaults. I'm like, Ray, you are the bubble. Wake up. Your hedge funds buying all these financial assets. A nutless monkey could do well in this market. Not that you're a nutless monkey. He's the most successful, but he and Warren, but a nutless monkey would probably do 80% as well as them. Buy anything in this environment where they push all assets up. Buy anything, you know, especially tech stocks. So that's it. Nobody sees that the threat this time, the bubble that they created to bail out the economy through the wealth effect, is what will destroy this economy. Because think about this. If in the old-fashioned model, debt and financial asset bubble deleverages, and that destroys money and that causes a downturn and falling prices. Well, how long does it take to deal with debt? Chapter 7 takes a long time. Chapter 11, even longer, okay? How long does it take for stocks to go down 40%? 5 weeks, boom! I'd say that was about 25 trillion disappeared globally. 15 trillion or 10 trillion just in the US or something, boom! That's more than all central banks just printed, okay? They just printed 7.3. We lost that much in the stock market in 5 weeks. So that's where the banks, central banks, and the gold bugs and people don't get it. This deflation can come out of nowhere, and bang, this will come faster than the Great Depression when it was more debts. And by the way, this financial asset bubble is everything. It was commodities into 2008, metals into 2011, real estate into 2006, and then again now, even higher in most countries, stocks at way higher than they were before. Everything has bubbled in the roaring 20s, the last great bubble in the last century. It was mostly stocks and farm real estate, not residential real estate. Commodities had already peaked and burst in 1920 and the early 20s. It wasn't commodities. This is a full-fledged everything bubble globally, way more global than the last one. And it is the financial assets that are the threat. And nobody sees that, so nobody's worried. And I know you see it because you focus on real estate and understand how overvalued real estate is historically. You say 40%. That's what my model says. And in the U.S., it was 20% coming into the GFC overvalued. And it was just the bad loans that made it so bad. This time, the fundamental demand is much lower by my model. It's 40%. It's as overvalued as Australia, even though we got kicked hard and have not bubbled as much as you. But relative, you have stronger fundamental demand than the U.S. does. Compared to the long-term model that tracks with real estate from Japan to U.S. to Europe to Australia, we're 40% overvalued, which to me means at least a 50% crash. In Australia, I've got the same thing as you, 42% overvalued. That means it's going to go down more than that likely. So what happens? Australia's got good demographics. Australia's government has the lowest debt. So what I'd be doing, if I was in Australia right now, I'd be shorting bank stocks who are going to, 75% of the debt is real estate oriented in Australia. They're going to get cremated. But I would be, buying government, Australian government, 20-year government bonds. I think they'll be a safe haven like the U.S. Treasury bonds. I'm going to be buying Treasury bonds here. And shorting stocks without leverage, you know, conservatively shorting stocks. And this new mutual fund I'm starting in Australia, that's going to be, we're going to do more complicated, but that's going to be the general strategy. Make decent money on the way down instead of losing massive money and then reinvest at bargain prices in the next boom. So, but that's a deflationary scenario. Now, the reason this is important, now, first of all, again, Peter's a smart guy. And he, what I like about Peter and a lot of the gold bugs, they do understand something I do from looking at history. You do not get something for nothing. All you got to do is look at life for that. I mean, just growing up, I learned that by age 30 or something. But, you know, so if you're going to have a boom that is over-leveraged with debt and then ultimately with financialized, it's going to end up in a financial crisis. It has never, ever not happened. Never in history when it gets to any degree like this. And this is off the chart. So he understands that. The difference is, does it end up with an, do we just print so much money as it gets exponentially worse? Because it's going too soon. And that turns into hyperinflation, like Weimar Republic, like Hungary had, and Yugoslavia had bubbles like that, where they funneled the money through the banking system. That's the difference. Or they borrowed, every time I see, either they funneled massive amounts through the banking system to create growth and bad investment, or they borrowed overseas and then failed and then got killed. This is not that. So it's clear to me it's a deflationary outcome. And I ask, what would it take to cause inflation? But I'm telling you, most people, when I debate Peter Schiff, we walk into that debate, there's way more people on his side. So it's important to listen to this because you can be right about the crisis, which is already against the grain here. Because most people just don't think the government will let this fail. And of course, that's what they told me in Dubai in November 2007 when I walked in. They had the biggest bubble in the world right then. And I said, this thing's going to burst. And they said, Harry, you don't understand. The government won't let it. They'll buy the real estate if we don't. 50% the next year. 50% in real estate. That's more than Australia will see over years, okay? That just doesn't happen. Well, it happened because bubbles burst. So but if you think it's going to be inflationary, you wouldn't be buying these bonds, Australian, and they would get killed. In hyperinflation, ultimately stocks would get killed. They might not at first. That's different. Real estate would like it at first. Commodities would love it. Gold, oh my God, gold would be. So that's Peter's formula. Gold, buy gold and hard assets like that. And short the U.S. dollar because they say it's the key currency in the world and it'll go down. I say, and it's one other argument here, Martin, and it's very important. Currencies don't trade like stocks and bonds and real estate on some fundamental value and what rents you can get or earnings from it or yield on a bond and discounting for inflation and interest rates. And then they can get way overvalued. Currencies trade relative to each other, okay? Countries that's stronger, country that has stronger exports and less imports, strong country that has less inflation, you know, on and on and on. A country that prints more money and stimulates artificially, will have a lower currency. And countries do that. They will print money or buy their own, short their, sell their own currency just to push it down to do exports. So they can manipulate that, okay? So we're the best house in the developed world. East Europe has way higher debt than us. Japan has 126% of GDP they printed cumulatively. Europe's printed 55%. We printed only 33%. Australia's printed almost nothing. Their debt in Europe, their debt in East Asia and in Japan is higher than the U.S. government debt and higher than our total debt. Our demographic growth is much stronger than theirs, much less of a downturn and much stronger in the future. Our demographics are better. Australia's trump card is your demographics are stellar. They're not just better, they're stellar. They look like an Asian country, an emerging country. And that's why you haven't had recessions and real estate crashes until you get this bigger crisis. And then you'll go through it, your banks will get hit, your real estate will get hit, and then your economy will be stronger, less debt, more affordable real estate, particularly for those Asian immigrants that you want to keep coming to keep you growing. And you'll be off to the races and we'll come out pretty good. I'm telling you, you watch this 3 to 5 years now. Europe, most of Europe and East Asia, including China to a lesser degree, because they still have urbanization on their side, but they do, their demographics are weak too. All of East Asia is even worse than Europe. They will come crawling out of this. And that's the part of the world Australia's in, and that's your best customers. So that's another thing. I'm like, Peter, how's the dollar going to crash? And if you want, I'll give you two evidences. We saw the GFC when it got really bad in Lehman Brothers and things started in real estate really went down and stocks went down and hit their first big bottom. Dollar went up 27%. Gold went down, Peter's favorite, 33%. Silver, his second favorite, 50%. Because they saw it wasn't going to be an inflation. They were thinking an inflationary outcome like Peter. It was deflation. We just saw the February, March, a little mini crash. I call it a preview to the movie coming, okay? What happened? Number one, Bitcoin did the worst. Bitcoin was down 46%. Stocks globally were about 40, anywhere from 34 in the S&P to 44 in the Russell, but about 40%. The Treasury bonds were up 14 to 17%, depending on what time, you know. And gold went up at first and then ended up down, but it wasn't down as bad as other things. So, but the surprise was, of course, you expect junk bonds to go down. They did. The investment grade bonds went down almost as much because COVID was unique. COVID hit major, at least a large enough percentage. Let's say that's 20% of major companies that got hit 50%, 80% in sales. I don't care if you have a AAA rating and the best company in the world like Coca-Cola, you go down that much in sales, you're an overnight junk bond. So, we just saw gold went down, but it wasn't the worst place to be. And I still say that gold is not the worst place to be. Junk bonds went down, stocks went down, and Bitcoin did the worst. The only thing that went up, the only thing was the highest quality bonds, the Treasury bonds in the U.S. And I'm sure if I looked at Australia, the Australian government bonds, I'm sure would have done the best in that as well. So that's just, I'm like, okay. We've had two smacks. The GFC was a bubble bursting. They cut it off halfway. By the way, another statistic I quote. The Great Depression crash, 29 to 32, was 34 months. It took that long and an 89% crash in blue chip stocks, the Dow, to delever that bubble. This thing was cut off in half that time, 17 months, the GFC crash in the U.S. So that quantitative easing, just when we would have started to really deleverage debt, pushed us right out of it. So no more debt deleveraging. Oh, and then add some more debt. Oh, and then the emerging world takes our cheap dollars and euros and borrows. They went on their spree and created a whole new debt bubble. So this is what we've done. And so it is a classic financial asset and debt bubble, and it will be the classic resolution, deflate those excesses, causing a deep downturn, massive business failures, massive unemployment, unfortunately, and consumer prices going down because of reduced spending. And again, just so much money. Who's been spending? Who did I say was spending all the money? The top 20%, the top 1%. They're the ones that are going to lose all that wealth. Average person, unlike Australia, you're a bit of an exception because you're superannuation and you're strong real estate, but average person in the U.S. doesn't have crap in things like stocks and only has 100, 200 grand in a house in Ohio, okay? Those are not going to fall much. This is going to fall totally on those wealthy that got the biggest gains and also reverse that inequality faster than any government policy in history could possibly do. So to me, it may sound perverted. I look forward to resetting this bubble. I'm sick of this bubble going on and on and on and making real estate so affordable a young person doesn't even have a shot. Stocks so high you couldn't possibly make returns for retirement 30 years from now if you invested in this market. And a perverted economy that makes no sense. And we get back down to where we can grow again, eliminate a lot of debt and get rid of these bubbles and get healthy again. The wealth inequality, I'm telling you, this wealth inequality will not even be an issue years from now. And it wasn't after the Great Depression. We had the same thing, 1% controlled 50% in 29. As it went into the 40s and 50s and 60s, it went down to 30, 35%. So, I mean, they're still wealthier, but not so dramatically. So all these things, the economy just wants to rebalance. A rebalance here is not inflation. A rebalance here is deflation. That's why I bet on the deflation scenario, and it says there's nothing that won't go down. It's just a matter of how much. A utility company will go down 50%, a tech company will go down 90%, consumer discretionary maybe 80%, okay? But they'll go down. Real estate, hey, if you're in Adelaide, maybe it'll go down 20%. If you're in Sydney or Melbourne, it'll go down 50% or maybe 60% if you're on the high end, okay? Maybe 80 if you're in a condo right downtown or something, you know. So that's really the gig. And that's Peter and I couldn't agree more that we got a big crisis and governments can't do this forever. He just sees an inflationary outcome. And you really need to come to this debate and hear both. Real quick, it's crisisdebate.com. You know, you probably got this. Friday the 20th, 10 a.m. Sydney time. I've done this a lot with Peter. It's the least favorite thing I do because I hate arguing with somebody. I'd rather argue with clueless economists that don't even think any of this is possible. Don't even think we have a problem. Peter gets it. But if you're going to hear this debate on the inflation side, you should hear from him. We're bringing the best from the U.S. So I strongly advise people to come. And it's free. We could have charged for this one, but we decided, especially we wanted to introduce Peter and Australia a little more strongly. He's really known here. People should know that.
Yeah, Harry. Well, I appreciate that very wide-ranging presentation on the issues. One very quick question before you, I know you've got to go. Yeah. Is capitalism dead because of what's happened?
It is. They killed it. They killed free market cap. When the central banks, particularly in 2009, took over the market, set interest rates short and long term. By buying bonds, they set the long term and they physically directly set the short term. By taking over the markets and not letting real pricing and real risk and real penalties and keeping the banks flush and not having foreclosed, they don't allow failure anymore. Nothing fails. Well, Japan's been doing that for 30 years. Ask them how they're doing if you think that works. They killed capitalism before we did. And we've killed democracy. Especially in a wealth inequality equation like this, boosted by QE, the rich just get richer, and then people can decide elections by billionaires decide elections. In the last election for this one, Mitt Romney was vetoed by two billionaire brothers, the Koch brothers. And the leading candidate was vetoed, and he didn't even run because two billionaires said, "We won't support you if you don't." So they killed democracy as well. So the two things that have made the whole Western world and now East Asia rich, we just killed. Another reason I'm looking forward to the Great Reset. We will get healthier. The internet and new technologies just allow a better bottoms up, and so including blockchain and cryptocurrencies ultimately, a better bottoms up economy that even more leverages the strengths of democracy and capitalism, who balance each other. The Democrats are the democracy, the capitalists are the free market capitalists, you know, the Republicans. They balance each other.
Harry, I appreciate your time today. Always a pleasure to talk with you. And we'll make sure that the links are below. And that debate on Friday, people should check it out because it will be the debate of the week, or at least the century, I would suggest.
Well, that's right. I might have said it's Thursday. It's Thursday. It's Friday at 10 a.m. Sydney time. Yeah, right. Yeah. Okay, good. Okay. Thanks again, Martin.
See ya. Thanks, Harry. Take care.